You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Hour number two, Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I want to dive in a little bit more, Kendrick Morales, and I'll get to this position discussion that I wanted to talk about. Now, Morales going later, and Tony, you said it refers to that position, right? Just being eligible for now at the utility position. We're seeing a guy that could hit 25 home runs, as Scott said, bat 270, bunch of RBIs, better spot here in Toronto. If he was to say first base eligible, would he go five rounds earlier?
He'd probably go four or five rounds earlier.
Okay.
So what happens, you get to like the eighth, ninth round of your draft, right? The first thing you're looking down at your team and you're saying, what position do I need to fill? And it's just, everybody does it. And it's in your mind, well, I need to get a second baseman. I'm running low on second baseman. I need to get a middle infielder. Nobody ever says, I need a utility position guy. And so I think it's just changing the mindset of people that's why the utility position is there. Often, one of the greatest moves you could ever make in an auction is put David Ortiz back when he was playing as the first player you nominate. And you'd get him for $4 or $5 later because nobody wants to take a utility position with the first pick in a draft or an auction.
So really, really, really glad you brought that point up, right? Because you're constructing your roster, fifth, sixth, seventh round, whatever, and you look at your team and you're like, all right, you know, I need a second baseman, the second baseman are going, I need a third baseman, the third baseman are going. And that is when position scarcity sneaks into your mind. Scotty, you have been a massive proponent of telling me position scarcity does not matter. You know, you take the best player available every single time, regardless of position. Mm-hmm. And I sit here and I wonder, like, I am like Tony, exactly what Tony just mentioned, where I am looking at my roster. And I see, we'll use second baseman. There's a ton of second baseman. We'll use second baseman as the example. We see my second base slot is open. There is a million second basemen that are just flying off the board. We've had that second base run, and I didn't get any. To me, I admit it. Like it comes into me. Like, I'd better get a second baseman.
No, I'm not going to tell you that I'm in the 10th round that I ignore it. You know,
but
early
it.
In the draft, you know, it's. What I'm saying is that I lean more towards, especially early in the draft, first three, four rounds, I'm not looking at position, maybe even the first five. But, you know, as I get later in the draft, you know, you naturally have to look at that. I think I start out not looking at it at all, but then it sort of climbs as a draft because then you're around 18 and you still don't have a middle infielder. You have to fill the spot, but I'm always going to lean in the direction, whereas if I still got an open spot for the guy that has better numbers, I'm going to take him over the position of need. Whereas to Tony's point is, you know, I would always go after Ortiz because, you know, I don't care that I freeze up my utility spot. Look at those damn numbers.
I am with you. The Kendrick Morales as a utility player, like he, Tony just described, he'd probably go four or five rounds later, best player available. Corey, are you able to stomach doing that? You don't have a second baseman yet, right? You're four or five rounds earlier. You're seeing the second baseman fly off the board, and you're going to fill your utility spot?
I think it boils down to, you have to know the player pool. You have to be drafting, and this way you know where the drop-off comes at each position. So if you go in there prepared, knowing what you're doing, you can't predict the draft, but have a good idea how the draft is going to shake out, then you know where your guys are going to land at, and that's how you can make a reach on a player that can give you 30 bombs, but it has to top your utility spot. You know second baseman is deep. You know it's a drop-off in the tier in first base. So I think it all depends on how draft strategy goes and your roster construction and your experience level of playing and your preparation level. So what I would personally do, it's going to be difficult for me to do it. I would say right now it is because I'm not I'm not an experienced player.
Sure, I understand that. But as Tony has described, you're making your projections out. You can project 25 home runs, let's say, from Kendrick Morales, like very, very safely.
Yeah.
You're going to worry about the position then. So position scarcity is a thing for you.
It comes into play, yeah.
It comes into play.
I feel comfortable and confident that I can get the guys later on to, you know, the middle infielders and the corner infielders and stuff like that. I think we'll talk about some of that later on.
Right.
So if I sat down today, right now.
Yes.
No. 2 weeks from now.
Maybe.
Quite possibly, maybe. Yes.
Okay. We mentioned earlier this week. I don't remember if it was yesterday or Monday, about like the NFL draft, right? Every team says, I'm taking the best player available, right? Best player available. I said that's BS, because what they're really doing is taking the best player available that fills a need. And I think in fantasy drafts, like, that is how I draft. Like, I'm taking the best player available in my mind, sure, kind of, but I'm really taking Tony, a player that fits my team. Like, you're looking at, we talk every single day here about roster construction. And there's times, right, you may have the first four picks, 25 home runs, no speed, right? So in round five, D. Gordon may be your best player available, let's say, because he fits a need on your team, not necessarily a position, but like a need statistically, but he's not really the best player available.
No.
So we're talking, I guess, position scarcity. Maybe we should also call it statistical scarcity, in a way, with speed in that matter, because you're not taking the best player available. You're taking the player that fits your team.
And that's in the draft. But you can't, what do you know coming into a draft? What, do you know what spot you're drafting from? Or do you get that designation, like, before the draft starts?
Me, personally?
Yeah.
I usually know where I'm drafting.
So if you know where you're drafting from, then you can kind of put it together in your head and stuff,
sure,
like that.
Absolutely.
And you can see if you could take that risk. Now, when you're in an auction, like Tony said, yeah, you, Kendrick Morales is somebody that you go for.
Right.
Because you can pay
a cheaper price.
You can get a discount for those kind of statistics, and you're still able to put your team together the way you want to.
Tony, when it comes to position scarcity, like, are you someone that takes the best player available for real, or the best player available that fills a need?
See, Scott, I think Scott he hit it on the head. For the first 5 or 6 rounds, you take the best player available. So, and then you have your numbers added up, and then you decide what you need to attack, right? So if I go 5 or 6 rounds, say I probably have 2 starting pitches, I probably have 4 hitters at that point.
Right.
And then I got to see, am I lacking stolen bases? Am I lacking home runs? And after round 6, that's going to dictate what I'm going to do. Perfect scenario is, say, like, using the second base scenario.
Yep.
I take Kendrick Morales in round 10, let's just say. And I get 25 home runs, but I get no stolen bases.
Sure.
So I gain 4 home runs because I need 21 home runs from each hitter. But I lost out on stolen bases. So that would dictate me taking Josh Harrison, probably my next pick, who had only 4 home runs but had 19 stolen bases and will be there later. And so I think once you get past round 10 is really where the statistics come into play. But you try to pick the best player for the first 6 rounds.
You know, it's interesting.
That's why I would never pick D. Gordon and never pick Billy Hamilton, because they're never the best player.
I think about it, you know, and wanted to hear what Tony thought about this, because he laid this out on the fantasy baseball special that he did. When you're talking about, you need to get a certain amount of statistics,
sure,
you know, per position, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on, you know. I wanted to know how different people handle it, because the draft is flying fast and furious, especially in an auction. You know, and you got to sit there and calculate, bam, 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 bam. You know, it's like,
that's why you
know, that's one way to handle it, Corey. I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that.
The auction might be a little easier, in my opinion, because you don't bid on every player, right?
Right.
I mean, there's been a times when I've gone an hour without bidding on a player, right? You're just sitting there. So you can keep track of it. But to Corey's case, I've tried that whole app thing, and I can't keep up.
Well, what do you do in a snake? You find it very hectic in a snake?
No, if I have one pick in the middle, I'm okay. When I'm on the ends, it's a little more hectic. Like, when you have the 2 picks in a row, it becomes a little more hectic.
Right.
The as I have said many, many times, I buying into Tony's theory that he spoke about on the baseball special, and as you just described, getting the stats. And I think what you guys have just said, Scotty and Tony here, of after the 10th round, really filling in statistical scarcities on your team is something that we have to take to heart here, right? That's when we go after those particular spots.
When you say, though, teams in the NFL draft will always draft for, you know, there's a lot of times that they take the best player. So I
don't believe that.
I mean, you know, look at the Titans. Did they really need to take Derrick Henry? when they had DeMarco Murray?
The Colts.
Yeah.
Well, the Colts are idiots. The Colts are idiots.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
I agree.
The Colts are idiots.
I think sometimes, you know, a player's there and a team just can't pass on him because they have him so high rated on the draft board.
It's right.
I've heard and seen several instances of that, and people question, well, you needed this. Why did you take this? Well, he was just so high rated on the draft board, we couldn't believe he was still there.
So, listen,
and that's what happened with Kendrys Morales in a baseball draft or David Ortiz.
I agree with that, Scott. Like, it happens, right? Like, yeah. The value is just so great that you're taking the best player regardless of position. Completely agree with that. But for the most part, in a draft, right? Like, I'll go back to the Giants in last year's football draft, and the NFL draft is coming up end of April, so that's in our minds here. I'll go back to just a couple years ago, or last year, the Giants, right? They had all these offensive linemen rated high. Jack Conklin, who went to Tennessee, Larry Tunsil was off the board because of the weed thing, and another offensive lineman, I forget who it was. Like, now, of course, forgetting the dude's name, but whatever.
Right.
These are the guys that they had definitely higher than anybody else. And once all these guys, their top eight players were off the board, okay? Number nine, or whatever they picked, number 10, whatever pick they had, they took Eli Apple because that was the next guy on their board or whatever. And you cannot tell me that Eli Apple was the best player available at that spot because he wasn't. Like, right. Eli Apple was a guy that, like, quarterback's the thing we believe in on this team. We're going to fit it in. So, to me, nobody really takes best player available. They take the best player available, fills a need. And I think
I think it depends on the team. I think, you know, I've seen years past where, like, you know, a guy is there and they just take him because he's so damn good, even though they might even be clogged up at the position necessarily. There are a lot of times that players, they do take him because of need, but I don't think they always do that.
There's no always.
There are a lot of times where just the guys on the board, it's like, you know, you went to Giants, I go to the Seahawks.
Yeah, of course.
They've needed offensive linemen for years. It wasn't until this year that they took an offensive lineman with their first pick.
But
previous drafts, they were taking guys, and I was going, well, they already have a guy at that position. But, you know, Carroll was like, that's the best player available.
Right, but do you agree with that strategy? Because, as you said, this team's needed an offensive lineman for years. I go back to the Giants. They need a linebacker for years. And I get furious that they don't take one. I'm sure you get
I think all of us naturally would want us to see them draft
a need.
For need.
Right.
Though.
I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And that's why I relate it to fantasy baseball.
Let's even look at Dallas in a way. And this could make a good debate. With that offensive line, does Dallas really need to take Ezekiel Elliott? There were Cowboy fans were like, you know, do we really need to take it? And no, they didn't. You couldn't pass on Elliott there.
But many people, Corey, had said Ezekiel Elliott, like, why is a running back going in the top five? And they're like, well, this guy is unlike any other running back, and it proved to me he's amazing.
Well, and then also he was also the Dallas Cowboys' best defender with his ability to eat up clock.
That's a good point.
Was DeMarco Murray 2 years ago.
Certainly. Certainly.
That's what I'm saying. You know,
Terry McFadden.
Yeah. Why do we, again, goes to the point. You know, Dallas could have waited until the second round and still got a very damn good running back. And maybe, you know, would have been better served to maybe take a defensive pick.
I get it. I get what you're saying.
A lot of Cowboy fans had said that.
No question. Yeah. No question about it. There's videos I made back in May saying this is useless. Ezekiel Elliott is a rookie. Blah blah blah. He's not gonna be any good. And then they're like, well, you watch them, like, oh, he's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
The fantasy baseball draft, I think, is to me, it is similar in that way. Like, I think there's certain times where, like, the value is so great, you take a guy and you're like, you know what? I'll figure out where to put them in that, like, I don't care if I have my four outfielders and my top 10 picks or whatever. Like, I'll figure it out because the value is too good.
Right. There's a lot of fans. That happens a lot in football with, like, less experienced players. It's like they'll see a quarterback that's still there in, like, round nine, and they already have a quarterback, but they'll take him. Not that I advise it, but it happens.
Sure. So given that value is too good, I'm there. But I am guilty of disagreeing with Tony or not following through with Tony, I should say, in looking position scarcity before that 10th round. Like, I will look at it and be like, you know what? I need a second baseman now. And I think what I need to be doing is looking at statistical scarcity rather than that position scarcity.
You know what people used to do it? back in the late 90s when Mike Piazza and Ivan Rodriguez were putting up, especially Piazza, as good as numbers, any offensive players, and catcher was so thin.
Yes.
That's when position scarcity came into vogue because everybody wanted a Piazza in like the top two or three because he played catcher and he hit 40 home runs and he hit over 300, et cetera.
And I think we see that in football too, right? Like when Jimmy Graham and Rob Gronkowski were taken in the first round. Yeah,
exactly.
That's like, oh, whoa, I'm getting this amazing tight end and you're getting crap.
Never worked, though.
It never worked. It rarely, I don't want to say never. It rarely worked. So do you think, Corey, same question here when it comes to the tight end, if taking Buster Posey in, like, what, the second round or so, where you're going to have to take him, does that not work?
I've always been a guy to say, why not grab one of the top catchers when he's sitting right there?
What? But
everybody else is critical of it, so I got off it, you know what I'm saying, to be honest with you. But, I guess it's really the kind of the nature of both positions. The players stay banged up.
Yeah, the Buster Posey thing, though, if you take him, right, and this is just the guys that are right there in this cat, like Jonathan LaCroix would be like the next guy. You get 20 runs and 20 RBI. You could get 20 runs and 20 RBIs, the normal guys at that position. So he's a little different because he plays more in that game. And I think a lot of people don't want to take a catcher early because of the risk of the position. Like they feel there's more injuries at the catcher position. Mm-hmm. And I don't know necessarily if that's true. I mean, it makes sense to look at it. But if you look at Buster Posey, he's played 146, 150, 147, 148, 148 games. So where are the injuries?
But how many times a week is he squatting down behind the plate,
Buster Posey? Well, that doesn't matter.
His eligibility is there.
Because of the eligibility,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, it's actually better the more times he doesn't catch.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Remember, like when Carlos Santana stopped playing catcher, and he qualified the next year, even though he wasn't playing catcher.
So once again, why is it such a bad idea to take Posey early?
I think because when you look at it, he's hitting 15, 18 home runs. He doesn't bring you a big like double digit stolen bases. So no other play. If you just take the name, if you take the position off that, he's going to have the lowest numbers of anyone picked in the second round.
That makes sense.
But
exactly
the way you look at it is that, all right, now let me take that out and say, hey, let me compare it to every other catcher that's going to be picked after him, and that's where I gain an advantage. So I could see both arguments there, and that's why I don't draft him that early, is because there's a huge difference between the numbers being picked in that round and what you get with Buster.
What about in the auction?
In the auction, it would all depend on the price. If you threw him out there early, the earlier you throw them out there, I think the cheaper you're going to get them because people are afraid to spend big money in the first few picks unless it's Bryce Harper or Mike Trout. Like they say, man, I'm not going to go $30 on a guy like this, Buster Posey, because they're being conservative. But you're in auctions. It only takes one guy. If one guy's out there throwing money like crazy, you don't get him.
Yeah, I think when it comes to those type of guys, Buster Posey, Kendrys Morales, David Ortiz, for instance, there's questions. And that's even a little different than the non-sexy guy, like Matt Carpenter, like they're sexy versus non-sexy. Now, this falls into even another thing with position scarcity and the ability to play every day and your emphasis on a certain position when it comes to the catcher. A lot more question marks would do in an auction make it a viable play to throw him out there early. When we come back, I'm going to go back into this position scarcity conversation with Matt Carpenter. How much does a guy that has multiple position eligibility shoot up your draft boards? How important is that? We describe it and answer that question next here in the Roto Experts. So we kind of described about taking Kendrys Morales. He's a utility player, and that brings his value down. That's why you throw him out in an auction early. But then you get to the other side of that. Matt Carpenter, both two guys that had a similar hard hit percentage, two guys that could be give you a similar amount of home runs this season. And everybody liked Matt Carpenter a lot more. And there's certainly other reasons, right? Like the OBP is significantly higher for Matt Carpenter. But one of the major reasons everyone likes him more is that position eligibility. This year, he's eligible right now at first base, second base, and third base, which is incredible. And as Tony said, in a Draft Stars league, with no trading, it makes everything a lot easier for you. Scotty, you're in a draft, and you just spoke about how, you know, you're not really looking at this kind of stuff until after the 7th round or so. And Tony said after the 10th round or so. How much, even before that, does a guy that has all of this position eligibility, how much does that creep into your mind?
If in the earlier rounds I'm stuck between two players, it'll break the tie.
Okay.
In the later rounds, I'll definitely, the middle to later rounds, I'll definitely be more in tune with it because it gives me a lot of roster flexibility.
Right.
Because if I take a player like that, it also gives me flexibility throughout the rest of my draft, you know, in terms of picking players.
Okay. Corey, are you somebody that sees all of his eligibility giving you the flexibility that makes you interested?
Yeah, definitely. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, you're going to have injuries and course and stuff like that throughout the course of the season, especially if you're playing in a best ball format. When you got a guy like this that you can pop in, move around your lineup to like you said, give you that flexibility, it does make him very intriguing.
Tone?
The biggest thing to me is that I think the deeper the league, the more valuable this becomes. So if you're playing in a 15-team league like we're playing the Grand Street Tavern on the NFBC, this becomes something because there's nothing on the waiver wire.
Right.
And even if there is guys on the waiver wire, you get into a 15-team bidding war for fab each and every week. So you're not guaranteed to get anything off the waiver wire. So in a deeper league, this becomes a tiebreaker, as Scott said, but it's worthy of more consideration with the more teams in your league.
To me, it just it makes everything easier, right? Like, you have a Matt Carpenter on your team, or anybody that has a position eligibility like that, that has that can play second and third and first, that when you're in a normal league, I'm not talking about an FBC league or Jeff Champions League or anything like that. I'm talking about normal, your league that you're playing with your friends. And you have this guy. It's just like it makes your life easier. That
it does.
Even during the draft, it makes your life easier.
Sure. Yeah. But after the draft is what I'm going to get to. Is that, Scott, you talk about all the time adding the best player available in the draft. We just spoke about 20 minutes on it. But after the draft, now I don't have to position scarcity off the waiver wire. Oh, who's the best second baseman? Yeah. I could literally, with a guy like Matt Carpenter, pick up the best player available off waivers, regardless of position. Do you do that anyway?
I don't understand the question.
Your second baseman sucks.
Right.
Whoever it is. It doesn't matter who it is, right?
Right.
Probably play for the Mets. So let's just say.
Let the barbs be accurate. Neil Walker's good.
Oh, let the barbs be accurate. What does good mean when it goes to Neil Walker?
Tell me what his stats would have been over a full season if he would have stayed healthy, Corey.
Well, he didn't stay healthy.
Yeah, so. 9 home runs in the first month.
Anyway, I'm saying, when are you going to make a pickup, basically?
Right.
You pick up a position you need, I would think, correct?
Yeah.
But why do you do that when you don't do it in the draft? Like I'm saying, like, shouldn't you always pick up, when you're making a pickup, the best player available?
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
I don't know. When
you go to the waiver wire,
yeah,
are you looking to fill a need, or do you want to get the best guy on the wire?
I'm looking to fill a need.
But isn't that the mistake? Isn't that the mistake, though? Shouldn't you get the best player available, just like you do in the draft?
See, when you're early in the draft, I think you want to get the best numbers overall. Then I'll worry about position scarcity and flexibility later on. I'm not saying I don't consider it, but I'm not going to take, you know, Buster Posey in the second round because catcher is thin. But I love the flexibility Carpenter will give me throughout the draft. You know, it'll give me, even on the waiver wire. Yeah, I do agree with that. I think there's something to be said for position scarcity. It's just not something I'm going to focus on early.
Forget that. After the draft, draft's over.
Right.
You have your team. You have your let's just say 25. Your 25-man roster here.
Right.
Okay? When the waiver wire comes and these players get hot, like, do you ignore it because, oh, man, my first base, I have Freddie Freeman as my first baseman.
Right.
I have Kendrick Morales as my utility. I have whoever at my corner infield spot, right? I have Adrian Gonzalez as my corner infield spot.
So you're asking me, do I draft the Carpenter?
Not draft.
Have flexibility on the waiver wire?
No. Forget the draft.
Yeah.
Draft's in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
You own Paul Goldschmidt. I said Freddie Freeman before. You own Paul Goldschmidt. You own Chris Davis. And you own Carlos Santana, let's say.
Right.
Okay? These three guys. So your corner infield is full. Your first baseman is full. And your utility is full.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. The hottest player in the major leagues. He's on the waiver wire right now. His name is Lucas Duda.
Right.
Okay? Hit 10 bombs in April. Do you not pick him up because you have three first basemen?
No, I go after him. You know, then maybe I make a trade.
But do you not go after him as hard as you would some scrubby, some second baseman that's like, eh, all right, maybe he'll get hot, maybe he won't, I don't know. Because of...
If I think naturally, if I got like, you know, Freeman and, you know, like really good guys maybe even better than he are, I'm not going to go as hard after him because I already have the position filled.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But is that right? Because that's different than the draft for the most part. You're not going after stats anymore.
You're not taking
position.
The same
approach
on the waiver wire that you are on draft day.
How am I not taking the same approach?
Because you're not going after stats anymore. It's position wise. The position's
already filled though. It's like, why am I gonna go hard after a guy when I already have Freddie Freeman, who's better?
Well, he's better, but this guy may be this guy may have a dream season. Who knows?
Well, I go hard after him, but you know, it's like I already have a guy there though. So,
but
that's just the way it works out.
But don't you pick him up for value, and don't you be like, all right, now I have this guy, and he's amazing, and I can trade this guy for this. Whatever.
Yeah, I go after that.
Not quite as hard. Tony, where are you on this?
It depends on the situation. If I only had, you know, one second baseman on roster, I lost a second baseman, I got to go out and get the
no choice
or whatever was up there. But last year, like it was Gary Sanchez was up for a fab bidding, and I thought at this late in the season, you're not going to get another impact player like this.
Right.
So I bid a lot of money on
right.
I think I bid like $260, and I think the next bid was like $12. And so I took a shot at the best player at that point. So I think a lot is where you are in the season and what your roster is. But I would always put a bid on the best player each and every week.
Yeah.
And I think that is the point that needs to be made. Like, there are times, I think we all do this. We're looking at the waiver wire, and we're staring at guys for a while. Yeah. And for whatever reason, you don't pick him up, whether it has to do position, whether it's like you don't believe it's true. You stare at a guy. But I think Tony is 100% right. We should always bid on the best player every week.
Right.
Always. No matter what. Whether it's a small bid
You always throw it in, yeah.
I don't know what people do.
The other thing is, if you're in a fab bidding situation, whatever the sport is, you got to keep people honest. I don't want anyone stealing a quality player for $4 or $3. So I'll put a bid in just in case, and I want to protect the process. I don't want to – if they're going to get a player that's going to make impact the rest of the year –
right.
I don't want him to get it because nobody bid on the guy.
Right. Exactly. And then that's kind of a defensive move right there, too.
Sure.
It's something that I like to do.
Yeah, I play defense,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Corey's big on the defensive moves, yeah.
Sure, I'm a big defender as well. I think I totally agree with it, to be honest.
I'm a shot blocker.
I'm with you. I don't want anyone to get anything for free.
We talk about that when, you know, in fantasy playoffs, you know, you pick up other guys so people don't get them and beat you with them.
But Scott, see, this is the problem I have sometimes, Scott, because then you'll sit up here also and be like, I don't worry about any other body else's team. I just worry about my own team.
Right. You say that a lot.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? Which cliche is it?
Well, what I'm saying is, and you're going back at me because you think I took a shot at you about the defensive thing.
No, I'm not.
Which
I'm,
I didn't.
I don't think you take a shot. I'm going to take a shot regardless. If I got information that I want from the Hall of Famer, from the king of fantasy sports, and I want him to break down his stance, and I'm sitting right next to him, I'm going to ask him.
Okay.
I just asked
you. Fair enough.
Which is it? Answer the question, please.
I just got into this. Now I forgot the question. He went on this long rant.
So basically, are you focused on your own team?
I'm focused on my own team.
Or are you looking to? Are you looking to play defense too? Because I'll be honest, I'm a defender. I'm looking at everybody.
I know you are. I know you are. I'm a little different from you like that. I mostly focus on my own team. But to Tony's point, though, if there's a guy that's out there that I think is going to be good, I just can't leave him on the wire.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, I'm not going to go checking everybody else's rosters. If I need the guy, like, you know, if I got a sucky third baseman like Chase Headley, you know, and there's a good, you know, third baseman out there, you know, I'm going to go all out for it.
You know, that's great. I was actually just thinking about it. So we're in a 15-team draft, right? And say you need a closer. We're around 10. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at team 14 and team 15 and see if they already have a closer. Because I'm not going to pick him this one. I want to see if he'll make it back to me. So I think you have to look at other people's teams at some point.
In that context,
to be successful.
It makes total sense, yeah.
But do you?
No, but what I'm saying is that, you know, like yeah, you know, I would do that, what Tony does. I'm saying I don't look at the other team. You got to put it in context here. I don't look at the other teams when I'm watching live scoring here or I'm building my draft. I'm not saying I never, ever look at another team. I think you guys are broad-stroking it.
You've broad-stroked it, Scott. I've been
doing
it for years. You've
broad-stroked it. No, I haven't.
You've said you don't look at the other team. You said you don't worry about what anybody else's roster. You've said you just worry about your team. Those are your words.
All right, Corey, let me teach you a word.
From your mouth.
Let me teach you a word.
Those words came out of your mouth on many occasions.
Yes, they did.
Over the last 6 years, Scott.
Yes, they did. But I'll teach you a word, and maybe I'll buy you a dictionary.
You don't got to teach me. You don't got to teach me nothing, Jack.
Context, okay? Context. I don't do it on live scoring. I don't do it on draft day. But, you know, to Tony's point, I would do that on the waiver wire. So there's a lot of times that I don't look at any other team. But again, and here's something. I'll give you a cliche and you remember it. Nothing in fantasy sports is absolute.
Oh, boy. You use that to back up your argument. That's a
proved what you said was wrong.
Scott. That's a comma. That's not a period.
I just destroyed your whole argument.
How did you destroy it, Scott?
Because you said,
you said that I never, ever,
and you've been doing this for years too, making blanket statements and, you know, just, you know, not, you know, putting in context. What I said is, yes, I agree with you, Corey. Many times over the years, I have not looked at the other teams, but that is in live scoring. That's in a draft. Across the board.
But when you're running waivers, when you're setting your lineups and stuff like that,
right.
You do not look at the other teams in the league.
When I set my football lineup, I don't look at the other team. No.
Fab night. Are you looking at other teams to see what their need is?
I might do that. Yes.
All right.
Now, you said you don't, Scotty, you said you don't look at teams in the draft. You just said that
right.
multiple times.
I'm worried about constructing my other team.
But isn't that a mistake, too? Because you'd be like, NFL is a fine argument. If I know every team has a quarterback, why the hell would I take a quarterback anytime soon? Isn't that something you should be looking at?
I think the only point that I get to do that is like when you're late in the draft, right? And like you're in something like Tout Wars,
right?
Mm-hmm. And you want to throw a $1 pick out there. And you don't want anybody else to get it.
Sure.
If they got two,
right?
You know, you do it.
But what about earlier in this kind of rounds out the position scarcity conversation?
Do that in the first six rounds. I just want to build my best team. Period.
But shouldn't you? If you see that every team has a second baseman, why you're not going to rush take a second baseman?
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to get into runs.
Every team.
I'm not going to get. I want the best players available.
But if you're in a one catcher league. And right. 11 out of 12 teams, you're the only team that doesn't have a catcher. You're not looking at that?
I don't have to look at the other team to do that. I got my tiers in front of me, and I know when the tiers are falling off to the point where, damn, I got to go get catcher now. So I don't have to necessarily look at the other team. I see it coming off the board.
Okay, but that doesn't solve the whole problem. Because you're crossing the guys off, right?
Yeah.
I agree with that totally.
And I'm like, damn, at this point, I better take a catcher because it really drops off.
Let's say there's 10 teams that have catchers.
Right.
And the only two are the one, or you... And the guy next to you, shouldn't you know that?
I think I look at it. There's only so much you can manage during a draft, though.
Sure,
especially a baseball draft.
An app. just like a draft caddy, Scott.
Yeah. I don't think I can sit there worrying about every single thing.
I try to worry about as much as I can. All right,
I think at what point you get to the draft where I do concern it, though.
We'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll do a team a day today. And that team is... who is this team today? Cleveland Indians. The defending AL champs.
Won the
Cleveland.
American League.
We'll talk about the Cleveland Indians on the other side of the break. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Today's team... As we do it today, the Cleveland Indians, they're the defending AL pennant winners. They won the AL last year. From a fantasy perspective, a lot of guys here that interest me. And I want to start with the most intriguing, I would say. Not the most intriguing, but the most questionable. The ones I have the most questions about. Tony, I throw it to you, my friend. What do you think of Michael Brantley this year?
I don't think anything of him. He's not even a player I consider even thinking about.
Okay.
He's been hurt for two seasons.
Yep.
Uh, I think that when you look at it, to think that he could come back and play and hit at the levels he did, I don't think the power with the shoulder injury is going to be there. I don't think he'll steal bases. I get excited when people draft him because I think it's a wasted pick.
Okay. Corey?
Yeah, I have him in NFBC. I took him. I tell you what round I took it in. I'll pull that up. I have so many tabs open. I can't handle it. That's old school Roto experts for those that remember. It's too much going on. I took him in double-digit rounds in NFBC Draft Masters. Listen, he's 3 years removed from MVP season. The injuries have piled up. But, man, if he hits this year, at the draft spot that he's going in right now, it's a hell of a steal. So I'm in on him, but the draft position has to be right. But I agree with Tony. It's been 2 years. What do you really expect? But you're paying a penny for him.
Yep. I just put ditto marks to what Tony said. It's, with the shoulder injury, et cetera. And last year I had him on a team, thought I was getting him in a value, and it was just frustrating waiting for the timetables. And already in the spring, we're already seeing the team.
Well, he's beat up.
Like, he's soft tossing right now, Corey. That's all he's doing.
he playing catch with his boy in the backyard. You know what I'm saying? No, but here's the thing. I got him in the 17th round of a 15-team league.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it might be worth a flyer. I mean, that's like a dollar player. So yeah. You got a guy, and they don't have, like, if he could actually play, he's going to jump in that outfield because they don't have a left fielder.
It's true. Obviously, everything comes at a price. Everything comes at a value. Is there a value, Tony, that you'd be like, you know what? I'll do it now.
I would think I would wait a couple more. If I got to round 20, I would have drafted him.
Okay. I think the same thing. Like, he's on my list. Yeah. If he gets to round 20, it's worth taking a shot on, seeing what this kid's got left. You're not even 30 years old yet. He'll be 30 in May.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I mean, he's a ball player when he's healthy.
I'm actually encouraged that he's, we made fun of the throwing the light toss. That's actually farther along than I thought he was.
Yeah. the rumors say that opening day, he's going to be ready to go. And he's going to be somebody that early on, he's not going to play every day. He's going to be annoying to own. But he's somebody that I wish I could stash away and see what I get in June.
You should be able to draft him at a stashable spot.
I agree with you. Yeah. And so he's
20th
someone.
20th round, yeah.
8th round.
20th round, I
think. Oh, yeah. 20th yeah. round. Just a name. He's on my list because I want to not forget him. That's all. All right. Two better players, much more draftable guys on the Indians here. I ask you, Scott, we'll go around the table here. Jose Ramirez versus Carlos Santana. Who you got?
Ramirez has done it in the minors. He's hit for average and the speed. We saw the power come along. But when you look at the amount of home runs that Carlos Santana can give me, look, it's all draft context and what do you need at that point. But, if you're asking me, like, do an overall ranking, I'll have Santana higher. I think he had career highs in RBIs and runs scored. And I think he can sustain that level pretty much. Obviously, we do everything by regular 5x5. Obviously, if it's an OBP league, there's no conversation here.
Okay. Corey?
Now, Santana, if I'm not mistaken, he comes into the season with what eligibility?
First base.
He has a first base eligibility.
He comes
yep.
in the first base mm-hmm. eligibility, right? So, because you got Ed E there now too.
You got double E there.
Oh. Yeah. So
but he'll play the Mike Napoli role, right? Like DH mostly, yeah. But first baseman as well. Yeah. I mean, it'll be Mike Napoli.
You don't
role.
Think they're going to split more time at first base?
I mean, Napoli and Carlos Santana
still
going to
retain the eligibility.
Yeah, still retain
yeah.
the eligibility, so it don't make a difference. So I'm going with Carlos Santana. Give me the big power that Carlos Santana possesses. I'll take that. Now Ramirez is a guy that you can get a little bit later on. You know what I'm saying? If you can get him as a corner, that's great. He's a nice consolation prize at third base. 15-15 guy with a 280, 290 batting average. Yeah, I'm down with both of them.
Which one would you rather have, though?
Santana. Give me the power.
Give me the power. Tony!
Chicks dig the long ball.
Scott hit it on the head. I would be Santana 9 out of 10 times. But if somehow they were around at the same time and I saw with short and stolen bases, there might be like one draft that if I had was short and stolen bases that I would go and draft Ramirez two rounds later. But in context, Santana's the guy.
All right. Labor, yet Jose Ramirez go in the seventh. My man Carlos Santana went in the sixth. About four picks separated them. They were seemingly very close there. Let me get to the pitching now, both at starting pitchers and the relievers here. Would you rather have Cody Allen or Andrew Miller, Tony? Everyone's
Cody sighs. Allen or Andrew Miller? I'm going Cody Allen. When you think about it, Cody Allen's going to contribute in the save category. Andrew Miller's going to get me strikeouts. He's going to get me ERA and whip, but comes short on saves. There's only so many guys. There's only like 24 guys that I could draft on draft day that I feel like I have comfort that they're going to get me saves. So I got to put that above Andrew Miller, who's the better pitcher. There's no doubt about it. Andrew Miller's the better pitcher. But I only got 24 guys that there's confidence that could get me saves. Cody Allen's one of the 24. That has to put him ahead of Andrew Miller.
Yeah, it's like Miller like will really like help your ERA, your whip. He gets tons of strikeouts. But Cody Allen's the kind of guy where if you're not going to get a Jansen or a Chapman and you still want a very secure first closer, you know, he's a great pick. And I'd rather have him for the big difference of, and Tony alluded to it, I could get 10 to 12 saves from Miller, and I could get 35 from Cody Allen. You're talking about a 20 to 23 plus save or 25 save plus difference. That's too big for me to ignore. I got to go Allen.
Corey?
He got the job.
He got the job.
He has the job, which makes him the man.
For now.
I just want to touch on Andrew Miller and pitchers that are quality pitchers. And people say, you know, the ERA and WHIP, he helps you in as well. You got to remember, at season's end, you're going to have 1,400 innings if you play the whole season out. Those guys only pitch 65 innings.
Yep. Yeah.
It's very minimal helping you in ERA and WHIP.
Totally with you with that. We'll take the break. We'll come back. We'll talk Carlos Carrasco, Danny Salazar. What you guys think of those two players? We'll take that break and wrap up the hour. Come up next here on the Roto Experts. Back with you on the Roto Experts in the morning. Scott Angle, King, Corey Parson. Tony Cicada, no doubt about it. The question is, with the starting pitchers in Cleveland, Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar, is this one easy for you, Tone?
No. In fact, I think I like the wrong pitcher in this group. I like Danny Salazar. The strikeout totals are immense with this guy, and I don't believe we've seen him put together the best of what he can put together.
Okay.
And I would go on him, but Carlos Carrasco is a steady pitcher. Both these guys are injury-related. Danny Salas is that magic age of 27 where we look at that people are in their prime coming into this. And a 10.56 K per 9 is there. The walk percentage last year, but I attribute a lot of that to injury. So prior to that, he was at 2.86, 2.88. I think that this kid is a stud in the making, but he hasn't ever got there yet. And I still believe in this kid, and I don't want to give up on him. And that's why I say I could be making a mistake here.
Corey?
This is a tough one. Tough one right here. Both guys are just like, you know, infirmaries. You know what I mean? I'm going to give the edge to Carrasco, though. I think he's a better pitcher right now. I think Salazar is a dude that's coming along. This is a toss-up right here, but I think I'm going to go with Carrasco because, Salazar had some of everything last year. You know what I'm saying? Like Salazar injuries are like the ones that really can derail pitcher season, elbow, shoulder, things like that.
Yeah, I go Carrasco. Carrasco's a safer pick.
Right.
Salazar ultimately might have a little more upside. But you look at Carrasco, I don't think he's ever topped 150 innings in a season. So both these guys are injury risks. I think it's obvious that you'll get the better whip right now with Carrasco. That could be corrected with Salazar, but I think that's also a minor tiebreaker for me as well.
The If I had to choose, I would also go with Carrasco. It just seems steady, and there's a lot of question marks. Danny Salazar. Are these two guys, Corey, that you're interested in taking? Like, do you want them? Are you out to get them?
Oh, that really depends on what's going on draft day. You feel what I'm saying? I can't say. I would have to be in a draft situation. Both players are interesting, but I would have to be in a draft situation to see how much I'd really be in on them and what's coming around, where they're going right now. I'm trying to look up some ADPs right now. Like, I'm looking at Salazar in the ninth round in this NFBC draft I did.
Yep.
I don't think I can get down right there.
Okay.
I mean, Carrasco in the fourth. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
It's like it's other guys there. I would rather Archer. Archer's moving up boards. I would rather like a Price over Carrasco.
Scotty, are these two guys that you're interested in, my friend?
Yeah, I think there's a point where I'm interested in it. Like, Carrasco hasn't had that year where he stayed healthy, you know, but, you know, it could happen. But, you know, when he's out there, he's going to be a very steady, maybe number three ideally guy for me. And, you know, Salazar's got the upside. So I think, you know, both the ADPs in which they were mentioned, you know, that it's something I'm going to consider.
Okay. Tony?
This is a tough one to look at because Carlos Carrasco is a guy that's being drafted early. I mean, if you're going to go ahead and take him and you realize that he hasn't ever pitched 150 innings, that's tough for me. But if other people realize in the draft and all of a sudden now I get him as the fifth or sixth round, then I'm interested. The way I look at it is here, if you're one of those guys that are traditional fantasy baseball players and you pick hitters first and you end up with Carlos Carrasco in the sixth round, you can live with that as your top pitcher. But right now, he's going 55th overall. He's going as early as 42nd. He's being drafted right after the Chris Archers, Steven Strasburgs, and I think this is a drop-off for Carrasco. I much rather wait five rounds later and get Danny Salazar.
Yeah, I think so, too.
The NFBC ADP, Strasburg and Carrasco are right next to each other.
Yeah.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. If Carrasco hits, let's just say Carrasco goes 100, 180, 190 innings, that's 200 Ks. You feel what I'm saying?
You'd rather have Strasburg or
Carrasco? Well, you could say the same thing about Steven Strasburg.
Yeah,
he
true, goes
on
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Strasburg, I feel like, has a tendency to be more dominant.
Mm-hmm. He does. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, he's going to have a heavy workload in the spring. That's what was reported yesterday.
Do we like that?
That Carrasco will have a heavy workload in the spring. Right. So by the time you get the draft day, it's a good chance you already have reports out of how he's doing and how he's feeling. And like we talked about on Old School yesterday, nobody's ever going to come out and say, I feel terrible. My back hurt. You know what I'm saying? I was up late last night. I got high all off season. So, you know, there you go right there.
But a guy like Josh Donaldson, I totally changed the subject now, right? Like, he has this sore leg. He on crutches. No, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Like,
A mild calf issue now.
He said now he's on crutches, right? It was a mild calf issue. No big deal. Now he's on crutches. Now he's not going to do anything for 2 weeks. Like, that's got to be kind of concerning, right?
I don't know. Is it a red flag or a buying opportunity?
You always say that. Every time I bring this up, you say that.
Yeah, I love it. I love every moment of it. Because everybody, like, when a guy hurts his foot, like, it's stepped on, they put him in a boot in sports. Like, it's the craziest thing in the world. No player that's played 10 years in Major League Baseball wants to play 6 weeks of spring training.
It's true.
Like, this is the perfect scenario.
Yep.
Max Scherzer, he pitched with that damn injury all of last year. And people are making, he's dropped in the third round of some draft this guy was in the other day because of this knuckle injury. He pitched the whole season like that last year. So these are things that I think are buying opportunities.
At what point, though, just headphones.
Yeah, you're going to get people in drafts like that. Like, you'll take Scherzer in the second round of somebody who's saying a lot of crap. He's injured.
So at what point of the spring do we say, so they say he's going to be in this boot down for 2 to 3 weeks.
Yep.
At what point do we say, you know what, maybe this is a red flag? Do you wait?
If he's not playing the last 2 weeks of the spring training, then I would be concerned.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Like, I look at you like you do, Corey. Like, there's certain opportunities here for me to buy cheaper, obviously.
Yeah. Dollar make you holler.
No, I mean, you're going to need more than $1.
Yeah, but still, if you say saving a dollar can make you holler also.
Yeah, oh, good. That's good. That's good to know. I know that. You know, us, Scotty and I, we like to say, we holler a lot. We like to save a lot of dollars, Scotty and I do. But I think it gets to the point where you get a little nervous, you know? You get a little nervous, a little cautious.
Little, but, you know, with Scherzer, though, it's like, I'll take him in the second round all day. You know?
Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And yeah. Same thing, though, Tony? Like, if he's not like, pitching, like, full strength last 2 weeks of spring training, you a little nervous?
No, with him, like, and Corey Kluber, like, those two guys, if they go at least five innings in a two games of four, I'm all for that. Because what that means is they just won't let him go deep in the games in the first week, month of the season, like April. So he'll go five or six innings.
Gotcha.
And I'll take five or six innings of quality pitching.
Absolutely. All right, take a break. When we come back, we started the show with one of the pieces of news. We'll start hour number three with the other. And that sticks with the Nationals and their brand new catcher. We explain and break it down next here at the Roto Experts. Plug in to the most electric sports show on radio. Strap in and listen to Game Time Decisions with Gabe Morenci every weekday at 5 p.m. Eastern, only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Don't be shocked.